there, and I have a couple cards on this one, but first I'll turn it over to Brenda Rogers for her usual summary comment. Brenda?
This is Brenda, and I'm not going to read through the full report on what you've been provided today, but I will, for each of the topics as we get to them today, review the department's recommendation and then be more than happy to answer questions as you get into your discussion later. First one, heart, lung, and liver transplantation services. A public hearing was held on October 12th for all five sets of standards. Oral and written testimonies were emailed and have been included in your binders. This was the annual public hearing held to determine what, if any, changes need to be made for each standard and on the need for continued regulation or deregulation of each of these sets of standards reviewed here for scheduled for review in 2012. The recommendations that are being provided to you do include an analysis using the guiding principles for determining whether a clinical service should require certificate of need review. The full written recommendation and analysis, as I stated earlier, has been included for you and was sent out to you last week. For heart, lung, liver transplantation services, the department's recommending consideration of deregulation of heart, lung, liver transplant services. These clinical services are constrained by the availability of organ donations. There is currently no indication of immediate or sustaining proliferation of these services. Quality and volume outcomes will not be affected as programs are evaluated and must comply with CMS requirements and adhere to United Network for Organ Sharing, otherwise known as UNOS, and Organ Procurement and Transplantation Network, otherwise known as OPTN certifications. The majority of the testimony submitted at the public hearing did support continuation of regulation of these services and no changes except for a possible facility-based needs methodology instead of comparative review. If the Commission chooses to pursue deregulation of heart, lung, liver transplantation services, then the process would be for the Commission to take proposed action, hold a public hearing to attain public comment, and submit to the Joint Legislative Committee, and then you would consider final action at a future meeting. Thank you.
Any questions for Brenda? Commissioner Gainey?
Yeah, Brenda, can you clarify something? I don't know if it's a typo or
okay.
There's a better explanation. Up on the top, first sentence is there is no data suggesting direct relationship between quality and volume, which kind of surprised me. But then on page 3, third paragraph, it says there is a direct relation between quality and volume.
That's on that first page. That no should not be there.
Take care of that. Thank you.
So there is data. So
there is. And I think partly what that was the actual numbers data. If you look at what's in the report, a lot of what we're referring to is from other organizations that they're supporting that, you know, there's the volume and quality, there's a relationship there. We don't have actual numbers data. So you can take that either way on that first page. So,
But not implying that there's no relationship in the peer-reviewed medical literature?
No,
okay.
No.
This is Commissioner Goldman. I have a couple of general questions, Brenda. First, there is a suggestion here about considering deregulation and in the process that you just talked about. Typically, in these meetings in January, they're more listening and creating an agenda than they are taking action. Mm-hmm. So the other approach is we can consider putting this on our work plan and doing something like a working group or a SAC to help advise us about what action we should take. Is that something the department thought about?
That is another possibility. When I say consider deregulation, I'm saying that based on what the department's recommendation is. Yes, the commission certainly has other options to look at. And even if you were to consider deregulation, it's not saying to take proposed action today, and I should have clarified that.
Okay.
That would be at a future meeting. So.
Right, that's helpful. And then the other question I have, and I think it's general to several of the recommendations, the recommendations indicate that certain services must comply with other requirements, CMS requirements, adhere in this case to UNOS requirements and certification. And we have heard that argument from public comment in the past. Why are you regulating this? It's already regulated somewhere else. Is this a change in the department's thinking? Because I haven't heard that directly an argument in the past that since somebody else regulates it, we don't. It would be one reason for us not to.
Thank you.
Do you want me to talk again?
You're saying that?
Yeah, I'm going to turn this one over to Milani.
Yeah. This is Milani Brim. I think from our perspective, as we looked at the standards this year, we took into consideration the current administration's interest in simplifying regulation and in the spirit of the governor's Office of Regulatory Reform. And one of the things they're looking at as they look at the, for example, the licensing of professions and occupations is the extent to which there are other organizations that people are accountable to or certified by or regulated by or monitored by or whatever. And if there are, then that perhaps weakens the basis for why you would need an additional regulation. So in as we talked about these, we looked at, again, the governor's interest in streamlining and reducing regulation where appropriate, and also the fact that we have other things that people are interested in having us regulate and trying to balance where do we get the best use and efficiency of our resources. That's kind of the basis. And the department is committed to supporting the governor's attempt to look at reinventing regulations. So I think it's in that spirit that we offer it.
Thank you.
Mr. Sandler.
Yeah, I have a comment to make about LIVR, not about whether or not we should deregulate, just additional information. I exchanged emails with Dr. Appeljude, who's head of all our transplant programs, but he's a liver transplant surgeon, simply to get more information. Considered an expert, et cetera. I posed them a number of questions. Do you still do live patients? Because there was some pushback because of potential complications to the donor. Do you do splits? How long do people wait before they get liver transplants? Here's his answers off the top of his head, however. He referred only to the Henry Ford program. Yes, we do splits, not that common, but yes. And the second part, we frequently send to children's. We do lives, but not a lot of lives. Mainly it's cadaver livers. I said, and his response was, how long do people wait? He didn't have a good answer for that in the sense of it could be weeks to years, depending on acuity and depending on, there's something called the MELD score. But he volunteered to follow it. Almost 20% will die while they're on the list, indicating there's a significant problem with lack of organs. Otherwise, almost 20%. But he didn't tell me that was the Henry Ford list or the Michigan list or the national list. I chose not to. I didn't try to elaborate. But that was his response. I did not try to verify it. I'm giving you somebody's opinion.
Commissioner Kashishian, when the department looked at the regulations between CMS, federal regulations, and the state, they do any comparison about the stringency of the regulations between the two in the enforcement?
They were reviewed as far as a side-by-side comparison. That was not done.
Commissioner Ganey, just a comment so we don't fall into the trap of the lowest common denominator of regulation. You could read this, and that looks like we might be doing, because the UNOS standard, just on volume alone, it takes 12 down to 10. Other program requirements would go by the wayside if we're going to use them as a surrogate. So I think as a concept, now everybody wants to look at dumb regulations and get rid of them. That's fine. But I think we don't want to paint with too broad a brush. Because if you get into the lowest common denominator concept of deregulation, you end up what happens with the financial services industry, and we all know how well that turned out. So, I think we should look at the appropriateness of the regulations, but we should do it with care, and we should have a lot more detail as to what are the UNOS requirements so we can at least do a comparison rather than just go, hey, somebody else is doing this. Let's hand it off to them. It just doesn't make much sense.
Others? Okay, we've got a few cards on that. And Commissioner Gainey echoed or talked about one of the issues that I had, because I see in the report if there is a direct relation between quality and volume, and you must perform 10 transplants over a 12-month period, what happens if you're below 10? Who yanks your ticket if there isn't a CON that applies to it? If others that have submitted cards want to talk about that, it's an open question in my mind how that works, in addition to Commissioner Gainey's comments about the, I think you called it the lowest common denominator. Yeah. So those are, in my mind, as I'm trying to grapple with this issue. So let's turn it over to public comment in no particular order. Deidre Wilson, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, please.
My name is Deidre Wilson. I'm the Director of State Government Relations for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. I'm going to make my comments very brief, and I'd also like to make them applicable not just to the heart, lung, and liver, but also to the BMT and the pancreas services, as they're just general comments. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan and Blue Care Network has consistently supported the CON standards and the regulation of services. While we do appreciate the department looking at deregulation and the administration looking at the concept of deregulation and streamlining, we feel because we consistently also have had a concern about cost, quality, and access, that if we are to look at the deregulation of these transplant services, that we would like it to be done and elicit the department to do so in a more formalized work group-like or SAC-like process, where we can have an open dialogue amongst the interested parties and discuss some of the issues that I think the CON commissioners have brought up today. We certainly might not be opposed to some regulation as that process moves forward, but at this point, I think we need to see a little bit more in a formalized process where we can deliberate more effectively. I would be happy to take any questions. From our perspective at this point, it's more of a process issue rather than getting into a lot of the details on the actual transplant services themselves.
Questions for anyone?
This is Commissioner Goldman. Yes. Has Blue Cross looked at the question of regulation by other bodies? In other words, these recommendations say UNOS or CMS sure. will regulate. Have you looked at what the implications of that might be in terms of enforcement?
You know, not specifically. So we have begun to, as this question came up on the deregulation, begun to look at some of the things such as UNOS and talk to other entities and how that regulation process may happen. I think that's why we would like a more formalized process to begin the discussion of talking about what other regulatory bodies or entities might be as effective, if not potentially, I suppose, more effective than the CON process, but we just can't say that at this point. We've begun that process and would like to formalize it a little bit more through a more formal process.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions from the commissioners? Okay, thank you. So that's your comments as to all of the...
It is.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Next we have Jeff Punch, University of Michigan.
Good morning. I'm Jeff Punch. I'm Marwan Abeljutz Khan's colleague, his counterpart at the University of Michigan. I'm a transplant surgeon and the director of the Transplant Center. And we do not advise removing certificate of need requirements for heart, lung, liver, and I will also include pancreas transplantation since all of my points essentially work for all of those services. I understand that the department has studied the issue and believes that deregulation would not result in increased costs because the number of transplants is, in fact, constrained by the organ supply, and transplants occur in the context of existing hospital structures, so capital costs, additional capital costs for a transplant program are low. They advise that significant regulation by UNOS and CMS, which has already been discussed, will prevent low-volume programs from existing and will maintain high-quality standards. I believe that the department is incorrect in believing that the expansion of programs would not increase cost, because while it's true that the overall number of transplants would not increase markedly, the majority of the costs for transplants are not capital, they're labor. Transplantation is really an extreme solution to a very devastating disease. What we consider excellent results are mortality rates at 1 year of 10 or 12% and at 10 years of 50%. It's really something that is fundamentally unnatural. A transplanted organ will reject within about 4 to 5 days if the patient is not really poisoned, if they're not given drugs to make their immune system not respond to the transplanted organ. The organ is actually literally dead. It's something that we can't do during the daytime. It must be done whenever the organ becomes available. The cells have no appreciable cellular function. There's a finite time that we have before it must be installed, if you will. And so the capacity for transplant has to be very redundant, and it has to be 24/7, 365. The standard of care is also, and the expectation in the community and across the country is high, and requires that not only surgeons and specialty physicians, but dedicated ancillary personnel do transplant for a living, maintain a high degree of experience. And really, the doctors are the easy part. The really expensive parts are the coordinators, the nurses, the social workers, the financial counselors, the pharmacists, the organ recovery perfusionists, the administrators, contracting specialists, specialists that interact with regulatory and compliance authority, quality improvement specialists, and so on. All of these people need to be able to be focused on transplantation. So there are enormous economies of scale here. And by allowing the proliferation of programs across the state, these economies are lost and the costs will rise. I would also like to point out another misconception, which is that CMS regulation and UNOS regulation would be sufficient. CMS does, in fact, regulate transplantation, but only as it pertains to being Medicare certified. Programs are never Medicare certified when they open. They generally would have a plan to become Medicare certified, but there's no reason that a program couldn't exist in perpetuity not being Medicare certified. It is not an absolute requirement, and there are certainly dozens of programs across the country that exist that way and have for many years. Why would a hospital subsidize an enormously expensive program in perpetuity? The same reason that a hospital would have one helicopter service when a nearby helicopter service has excess capacity. As one example, transplant programs are high-profile programs. They bring respect. However, it really is merely purchased respect. As the department points out, there are no capital issues. There are no futuristic complex machines that exist at Henry Ford and U of M and at Spectrum's heart program that other places don't have. What we have are the people with the appropriate knowledge and experience in the care of these vulnerable patients. We have enough people that do this in the state now, and they're all on call 24/7. At multiple programs, so adding more programs just increases the cost, increases the number of people that are paid 24/7 to do this same amount of work. Finally, speaking of knowledge and experience that will be diluted by a proliferation of programs, there's good data that low-volume programs tend to have higher mortality rates, and I understand the verbiage of the department's overview has been corrected to not dispute that. It's higher that lower volume programs higher complication rates. It's been shown with other things from aortic surgery to cancer surgery. It's well recognized. There are papers in the literature that address the issue for liver, kidney, and liver, kidney, and heart transplantation. And I'm available with specific citations and data if you would like. I would like to share just one piece of data. It's unpublished. It's from a group called the Studies in Pediatric Liver Transplantation. That's a consortium of pediatric liver programs across North America. It includes Canadian and American programs and includes 70% of the data on pediatric liver transplants performed in the last 15 years. And what you can see is on the bottom, the number of liver transplants is plotted and going up is the number of biliary complications, and the spots are individual programs and what their rate of biliary complications are. A biliary complication is a devastating problem for a child and often requires multiple procedures and multiple operations. And Mike Inglesby, one of my colleagues, published a paper that showed the increase in cost from a biliary complication is roughly $250,000. You can see that in the A there shows what are really the high volume programs, as well as D, and the B and C are the low volume programs, and then C and D are the high complication programs, B and A are the low complication programs. You can see while there are a lot of low complication, high volume programs, and there are some low complication, low volume programs, there are virtually no, all of the programs with high incidences of biliary complications are low volume. Regarding the contention that existing regulators would maintain volume, a commissioner asked who would yank their permit, and the answer really is no one. The UNOS has regulatory authority, but they really have no teeth, and the group that is involved with that is called the Membership and Professional Standards Committee. Both Dr. Ibeljude and I have sat on that committee and have reviewed the cases, and it's really for programs that are having quality issues, it's a matter of drawing their attention to that. No program has ever been shut down for that reason. Similarly, their volume requirement is one. If you don't do one a year, that brings that rings a bell and that program gets reviewed. But what they really look for is all the things that I just mentioned, all the expensive things. They say, where is your social worker? Where is your dedicated pharmacist? And so forth. So what they're really in the business of doing is maintaining the expensive nature of transplantation. One of the reasons CMS got in the business of monitoring transplant programs is that UNOS has new regulatory teeth, and this was discovered when there were some problems on the West Coast that had were essentially asleep at the wheel, and then CMS got involved and issued specific, very complex and detailed requirements. Unfortunately, I would be happy to discuss those further since I'm, as Dr. Ibeljude is, an expert in that area, since it takes so much effort to meet their standards. But again, those standards don't encompass quality, and there is no reason a program would not continue to exist doing fewer than 10 transplants a year.
Dr. Punch, if you could summarize. Usually we give a three-minute time limit, and I bet it's been over three. I'm just not counting. Okay, thanks. You summarize your final remarks and open it up for questions.
The last statement was just pertaining to there's some discussion in some of the last part of the document that you reviewed on page 3 about routine referral, medical record review. Those only pertain to organ donation. They are not specific to transplantation. Thank you, and I apologize for going over.
That's fine. Questions for Dr. Punch? We'll start with Dr. Sandler.
Thank you for your comments. And I understand quite well how they apply to heart, lung, and liver. I'm having a little more difficulty, however, on the pancreas. And the argument is, and correct me if I'm incorrect, since I'm a radiologist by training, on pancreas transplants, they frequently are done with kidneys and frequently by the same surgeon. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
That kidneys are not regulated by, at least by this body.
Well,
so I'm not certain if your same reasoning applies to pancreas that it couldn't be deregulated. Hope that brings a smile from
I think that the arguments apply best to heart, lung, and liver.
Okay.
You raise a valid point. The point that is, I was afraid I wouldn't have enough time, so I didn't cover. There are also educational requirements. Right now, the main body that accredits transplant surgeons require that surgeons do 12 pancreas transplants during their training. Right now, in the state of Michigan, there's only about 25 done per year. So that really limits us to be the only program that has significant volume, and we're doing about 15 to 18. So what we wind up doing is eliminating the ability to train future surgeons in the state if we make the average number of transplants drop by a certain degree. But I think that the argument is it's a very good point, and I would oppose regulation of pancreas transplantation much less vigorously.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Kashishian, thank you very much for your comments. I went to the UNOS site and pulled how many heart transplants various institutions did during the previous year, 2010. And it was somewhat bothersome that, you know, CMS says there has to be